This is Paul Beston, Associate Editor of City Journal, and I'm talking with Heather McDonald about her important article, Chicago's Real Crime Story, which appears in our Winter 2010 issue. She's a contributing editor of City Journal and a Manhattan Institute Senior Fellow. Heather, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me on, Paul.
Your story has several layers. You describe Chicago's long-running epidemic of youth violence, which got national coverage last fall with the beating death of teenager Darian Albert, and a cell phone video of the killing spread all over the internet. And you point out how the Albert killing took place in Roseland, the same neighborhood that a community organizer named Barack Obama worked in 25 years ago. What made you connect those two things?
Well, Obama's time as a community organizer in Chicago from 1984 to 88 was characterized by the exact same blindness to the real causes of black youth violence as I found today in reaction to the Darian Albert killing. And that is a taboo about discussing black family breakdown.
Right.
It was also interesting because up until the Darian Albert beating, Obama's organizing time in Chicago was viewed as this marvelous qualification for the presidency and got a lot of coverage. And yet, as soon as the Albert beating became really international news, from, as you say, the exact neighborhoods that Obama was working in, suddenly Obama's time there was blanked out and forgotten. And I thought that it was important to try and connect the two because it represents a tragic continuity of failure to speak honestly about why blacks kill each other at such an astronomical rate.
And you, in fact, you trace this line from the way he describes the problem in his first memoir, Dreams from My Father, and the way the community organizers in today's Chicago talk about the problem. It's nearly identical, right?
Well, Obama, his autobiography is really quite compelling, and he is honest in spite of himself. It is filled with very telling details about the underclass culture. He describes seeing teen mothers pushing their babies around in baby carriages, dropping the potato chip wrappers on the ground, sees young boys shooting each other. And it is a world with virtually no adult males in it besides the pastors that he talks to occasionally. So he's almost a idiot savant transmitter of this reality. And yet, when it comes to finding a cause to embrace as a community organizer, he's initially at a loss. He can't really figure out, well, what should we do? Even as he sees around him, the social breakdown and the shootings had been huge. The year he arrived, there was a very notorious killing of a teenage basketball star, Benji Wilson, that got a lot of attention. But he can't figure out what to do, and he finally comes up with the idea of trying to get a job training center in Roseland. This is completely along the philosophy of community organizing, which was a concept developed by radical thinker Saul Alinsky during the Depression in Chicago that viewed poverty as a political problem, as a problem of lack of power. Poor people are poor not because of poor decision-making on their part, but because the haves conspire to prevent them from having adequate political power. And so the emphasis is always outward. It's you try to organize poor people to demand benefits from the power structure, whether government or corporations. And so Obama, surrounded by evidence of the breakdown of personal responsibility, looks instead to entities outside the community, whether it's the job training or his other big cause was testing for asbestos in the Altgeld Gardens housing project,
right,
which is very irrelevant to the problems that surrounded him. And that blindness continues today. The current leaders of Chicago that are taking the lead in trying to address youth violence are also saying that, well, the answers, the problems are with government and the answers lie with government.
And even at the national level, right, some Obama administration officials went out there and essentially gave the same message, right?
After the shooting, Obama, this redounded very poorly to Obama because all of a sudden Chicago was getting bad coverage, and this was right before the Olympics decision. So he sent out the federal education secretary, Arne Duncan, who had been the Chicago school chief, and Eric Holder, who's the attorney general, to have a youth violence summit in Chicago right before the Copenhagen Olympics decision. Fortunately, they obviously a little too late to repair the damage to Chicago, but Duncan issued a classic statement, which is, well, we're all responsible. This right. problem of youth violence is something that all of society is responsible for. Well, in one sense, I suppose, in a very literal sense, that's true, but you leapfrog too quickly over the fact that the people who are most responsible are the parents and the fathers, and that you're not allowed to say. Eric Holder was as disingenuous in his response. He said, youth violence is not a Chicago problem. It is not a black problem. It is a problem of everybody. It is a white problem. It is a problem across the country. Again, in a literal sense, that is true, but the fact is that disproportionately, black youth kill each other at astronomical rates compared to whites. And we're not going to accurately find the reason for that if we ignore that disproportion.
Right. And in fact, you've got the numbers to back that up. Do you want to run through some of those, some of which you were not able to get into the story because of how long it took to unearth them from Chicago's public officials?
In 2008, among juveniles, blacks committed 78% of all shootings. Blacks are about 35% of the Chicago population. Hispanics committed 18% of all shootings. So between the two of them, you've got 96% of all juvenile shootings. Whites are 28% of the population, and their involvement in violent crime is absolutely negligible. This is a disproportion that plays out nationally.
Right.
Nationally, black males between the ages of 14 and 17 are 10 times more likely to commit homicide than whites and Hispanics combined. And what that tracks with is the illegitimacy rate.
Right.
In Cook County in 2003, 79% of all black children were born out of wedlock, compared with 15% of all whites. So if I were given power to say, okay, what's the most important thing we could look at, I would connect the data between violent crime among youth and among adults, which is so disproportionately black, and the black out-of-wedlock birth rate, which is also way out of line with the rest of the country.
And in fact, you looked into the backgrounds of both Darian Albert, the teenager who was killed, and the other people involved in that event, and all the backgrounds were, as you suspected, regarding family breakdown, right?
Everybody comes from fatherless families. It's, at this point, talking to some of the social workers who work with youth, it's actually stigmatized to come from a two-parent family. Kids say, well, what do you know? Your parents are married, or you've got a father at home. It is so much the exception at this point in Chicago and really across the country that it's seen as something aberrant. And even though teen pregnancy has dropped considerably since the 1990s, in many inner-city schools it's still viewed as the norm. And as usual, the fathers are nowhere in sight, and nobody's really stepping up and demanding that they take responsibility for their kids. It is simply viewed as the norm to have a baby, to father a baby as a boy, and then walk away. And my view is that is really bordering on civilizational collapse, because marriage is what civilizes men. And when you send a message to young boys that we view it normal, as normal to father a child and then disappear, boys fail to learn the most important and basic lesson about personal responsibility. And without that, it's hard to think of reasons for acting responsibly in other fields of life.
Right, and in fact, it's memorable in the story when you ask one of the social workers about any efforts being made to track down fathers for these kids, and I can't remember if it was a man or a woman, but they act as if they've never heard that question before.
Well, this was actually somebody from Obama's former community organizing outfit, the Developing Communities Project, who was engaged in classically Alinskyite reaction to the Darien Albert beating, which they're saying, well, it's all the school system's fault for sending Gould children across gang lines. And so I asked him, well, has anybody ever thought of asking who are the fathers of these killers and victims? Because the press will occasionally track down the mothers, but it's as if these are all virgin births. You never, ever, in any media account, I don't care where, whether it's the Chicago Tribune or the New York Times, I defy anybody to come up with a press report that says, well, his father is doing this or that. They're just gone. So I asked this guy, John Paul Jones, well, does anybody ask about fathers? And he was just speechless. And he had conceded that it was a good idea after a long pause, but it just is so alien to people's thinking that it throws people.
Right. And it's just created a whole sort of alternative universe for these teenagers, right? I mean, you visited with some of them, right? Some of these
yeah, they
kids.
Have a very disparaging attitude towards marriage. They, the ones I talk to, they see it in terms of divorce and unfair child support requirements. So for them, you have a baby, and that's just the way it is, and marriage is a very remote and undesirable option. And the family structure, once you break that down, it just becomes absolutely insane. I talked to one girl who thinks she has 10 siblings by 5 different fathers, but she's not quite sure, and her mother is in North Carolina, so she can't track it down. And once you start applying this acid to traditional family structure, it keeps on working. So what I'm hearing both in Chicago and elsewhere is that now the mothers are starting to check out, and they are at minimal emotionally absent and are not giving encouragement to their children, or are physically absent. The mother of the victim, Darien Albert, the victim of this beating death, was sort of out of sight, out of mind until this event occurred. Now, that's not to say that there are not hundreds of thousands of inner-city single mothers who are fighting against the culture and are trying to do everything they can to raise their children to be responsible, law-abiding adults. But the odds are simply against them. And trying to raise children with two parents working is hard enough, but doing it on a single salary or single welfare check without the emotional backing up of the other creator of this child is just odds that few people can master.
Right. Let me shift gears to something else that you've written so much about here in New York, and that's policing. And you've written for years about the NYPD's great success in bringing down crime and really turning around New York. What was your take on the culture of the Chicago PD, and why do they seem, at least in terms of this youth violence plague, to be not as effective? I mean, are the challenges they face greater, or is it just different somehow? What's going on at the Chicago PD?
Well, in one sense, New York is kind of an unfair benchmark because there's very few departments that have achieved the astounding 77% crime drop that New York did through the application of data-driven policing over the last 16 years. Chicago youth are killed at a rate 4 times that of New York youth, so they have a much higher violence problem. They did bring crime down. I mean, Chicago crime dropped maybe 50% over the last decade and a half, but it has not had the same sustained attention to a single approach to policing that New York did. New York, early on in the 90s, became obsessed with analyzing crime data and obsessed with holding local police commanders accountable for crime in their precinct. And that focus has not wavered through 4 different commissioners, and it has accomplished an astounding turnaround of New York City's economy thanks to lower crime. Chicago didn't have that sustained focus. They've spent a lot of resources on community policing meetings, which were highly cop-intensive and hard to sustain community interest. And only recently did they start picking up the data-driven policing and accountability style of New York. And they've had some successes, but my sense is it doesn't have the same single overriding idea. And it was difficult for me to penetrate the department. Now, that's true of most police departments in New York. It's certainly a fortress as well. But what's interesting is that in Chicago, youth violence is not talked about as a policing problem. It's talked about as a schools problem, and it's the right. Chicago Public Schools who have taken, as they say, ownership of this problem rather than the police. And that's partly thanks to Arnie Duncan, who I mentioned earlier, who is now Obama's education chief and was the Chicago school superintendent. He used to shed tears publicly when Chicago public school students were killed, and it's framed in Chicago by the press as a Chicago public schools problem, which I think is a little unfair, but that's how they're thinking about it there.
Yeah, to New York ears, that sounds rather odd. But I think in your story, you mentioned how the schools have come up with an entire multi-million-dollar, I think $50 or $60 million initiative of social services to fight this with, which seems like just a prescription to keep going around in circles.
Absolutely. $60 million over 2 years, much of that federal stimulus money. And again, it's the Alinskyite view, which is that sort of what we need is advocates. We need people to make demands on systems outside of themselves. They're bringing in a group called the Youth Advocates Program to assign advocates to students that they've determined through statistical analysis stand a 1/5 chance of getting shot in the next 2 years. And these advocates are basically government-paid community organizers, in a sense. They also are supposed to do mentoring. And if they were suffused with a value approach and talk to the kids about honesty and self-restraint and real courage, maybe it would have an effect. But it looks to me like this is a classic value-neutral social service organization. And again, the problem is that this takes the place of talking about the real problem, which is family breakdown. They're going to spend $60 million in 2 years, and as you say, it's unlikely to make a difference. You know, I kept asking people, if you could repair families or get an endless government check, which would you rather have? And people tend to duck it. But I know that if you could wave a magic wand and say, okay, we can either have the two-parent family strong again in the black community, or we could have welfare workers and community organizers. It's an easy decision. You know, that's you've got to start with a family, and you can never compensate through government programs for that breakdown.
Right. Well, in closing, I mean, do you see any signs of hope among Chicago's political leaders that they're starting to grasp this unspeakable truth? I mean, you mentioned Obama's Father's Day speech of either a year or two back. Do you see anything on the horizon that shows any hope of confronting this?
No, I don't. I don't see any talk about fathers in Chicago or elsewhere. And really, Obama does have a great opportunity here, and he did give a fantastic speech in 2008 in Chicago while he was running.
Right.
That said, you know, if we were honest with ourselves, we would acknowledge that too many fathers are missing, and he implicitly tied that to the youth violence problem. And he gave the statistics about, right. you know, the rates at which you're going to kids from single-parent homes end up as criminals and in jail. Right. But then he ducked then it even within the speech, and he hasn't really returned to that theme much as president. But he has an opportunity to do something, even if local officials are not going to.
Just using the presidential bully pulpit.
I think it would make a difference.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks very much, Heather, for being with us.
Well, thank you for talking with me, Paul.
To read Heather McDonald's article, Chicago's Real Crime Story, go to our website, city-journal.org.